livalelisayo nguChris Gande.
Ngani tshona njani mthwakazo muhle Zimbabwe muhle kwazi why muri Zimbabwe ndeyipi kuhama dzangu Zimbabwe muhle mthwakazo muhle. If you're tuned in right now, you tuned into Live Talk The Connection, brought to you by Studio 7 Voice of America on Tuesday the 8th of December 2020. Muri Zimbabwe mthwakazo muhle. I'm your host, Mike Wole. Unfortunately, Zimbabwe moshe, Moria Zimbabwe, Zuluganda Mthwakazo moshe, due to umkhuhlane we COVID-19, we are working from home. So what this means for tonight's program is that, unfortunately, this is a pre-recorded program, and we cannot have you call in as per usual. Nonetheless, it's okay like so, so what you can do, Moria Zimbabwe, to give your input, you can send us your thoughts. Power WhatsApp number is +1 202 465 0318. The number again, +1 202 465 0318. We're also going to be broadcasting on our three Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Studio 7. So don't forget to press the share button and the like button so that we know Muriye Zimbabwe, chukona chirongwa chedu, ne uwandu wedu, uyeje, muchange muripo, Zuluganda bali kona. Bungelani Zuluganda ba, njengaloku nisandugusho, sisonke like so, namhla kuhlelo lethu labasakhulayo. Tonight on The Connection, we continue speaking to Zimbabwean youth about the current state of Zimbabwean healthcare. Joining us is going to be Unhlanhla Moyo, a member of our Dot Youth, and he's also a reproductive health and rights advocate. We're going to be focusing on young people, abaphila negcikwane le-HIV AIDS. Now, during a time whereby the whole world is fighting COVID-19, in Zimbabwe included, Zimbabwe is currently under the COVID-19 lockdown. Now, this COVID-19, which is responsible for taking millions of lives across the globe, the big question we're going to have is, how are youth living with HIV and AIDS in Zimbabwe currently surviving? How has the COVID-19 pandemic affected their lifestyles? We look to hear more from Unhlanhla Moyo. But joining us tonight is also going to be Samantha Swanda, who is a member of Signs of Hope Trust, Elvis Mgari, a human rights activist, and Rwazano Makumbe, a human rights lawyer, as we focus on how COVID-19 has affected Zimbabwean youth, the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence commemorations, which come to an end on the 10th of December 2020, which is Human Rights Day. So that's going to be our discussion. But first up, umkhuhlane we COVID-19, chirwere che coronavirus. According to the Ministry of Health, the latest information that they have released, over 10,800 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in Zimbabwe, and over 8,970 recoveries have been recorded to death, and 294 deaths. So the numbers again, over 10,800 people have tested positive for COVID-19, and all these accumulative cases are over 8,970 recoveries in Zimbabwe and 294 deaths. As of last night, 1,270 PCR tests were conducted, 121 new cases were detected, 92 recoveries, and 3 deaths. Zimbabwe currently has 1,573 active cases. So don't forget, Muria Zimbabwe, the 10,839, those are cumulative cases. So those are cases recorded from day one in Zimbabwe, which happened in March up until to date. 10,839 people have contracted COVID-19. And to date, just Nezuro Maneru, active cases, people that have still have contracted COVID-19, 1,573. When we look at the areas most affected by COVID-19, Bulawayo and Harare are still the highest. Bulawayo is sitting on 2,605 cumulative cases, and Harare on 3,483 cumulative cases. When we look at the deaths, Bulawayo registered 83 deaths, and Harare is currently on 131 deaths. Just yesterday alone, amongst the results released, Bulawayo and Harare recorded each a death. Now, when it comes to the conversation about the healthcare sector, last week we heard from President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who, as he addressed the nation on World AIDS Day. Now, during this time, what President Emmerson Mnangagwa echoed several sentiments, amongst them being the fact that the COVID-19 pandemic affected a lot of sectors in Zimbabwe, the healthcare sector being one of them. Now, he also vowed that his government is going to be working to the nail to ensure that they can better service delivery in the country. And here we're talking about the healthcare sector. He also applauded the strides that Zimbabwe is currently taking in terms of the fight against HIV/AIDS. Now, for those that do not know, in December, that's when the World AIDS Day commemorations are set. So a lot of things are currently centered around that. President Emmerson Mnangagwa uthi hayi ele Zimbabwe uyalishaya lihlombe. He applauds the strides that Zimbabwe is currently taking. So we decided to reach out to the youth themselves to hear their thoughts on Zimbabwe's fight against the HIV/AIDS. And of course, most importantly, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the lives of those that are currently living with HIV/AIDS in Zimbabwe? As I mentioned earlier on, Mudia Zimbabwe, we reached out to Nhlanhla Moyo of Dot Youth. Let's hear what Nhlanhla had to say.
Thank you very much, Mike. I think let me just give you a bit of background of where we are coming from when we talk about HIV and AIDS as a country. I'm sure you will remember in the 10, 15 years back, we had a lot of deaths that were coming through, especially parents passing away and leaving children as orphans because of issues of HIV and issues around stigma and discrimination in the communities when it comes to HIV. I think we have come a very long way as a country in terms of policy, in terms of practice, and in terms of the community response, as it were, when we talk about HIV and AIDS. So, for example, at policy level, we would know that the parliament then enacted what we would then call in Zimbabwe the National AIDS Council, which is a coordinating body meant to coordinate the national response to HIV and AIDS in the country. So when that was done, we then had policies that have been put across for the past couple of years. You talk about the Zimbabwe National HIV and AIDS Strategic Plan, which is a 5-year strategic plan for to address emerging HIV and AIDS issues. Now, we then have different strategies and as well CSOs that have come up as a result to complement the government with regards to the response. So you would look at the statistics from about 10, 15 years back and the commitments that we've made as a country that includes your Abuja Declaration, your Maputo Protocol, and the like with regards to health as it were. You'd see that we have made considerable progress in as much as, yes, we are still a bit high, especially around young people in terms of new HIV incidences. But overall, in terms of the global 1990 targets, the United Nations targets, if you heard of them, we are just about there as a country because we are said to be reaching what is called epidemic control, which is something to really smile about.
Now, I want to drag you a little back and talk about the youth. I'm glad you just mentioned that. Is HIV/AIDS a prevalent disease among Zimbabwean youth?
Oh yeah, we have, I think when describing young people basically as a whole, before we get into whether it's a prevalent ailment amongst young people, first we have three categories of young people when we talk about sexual and reproductive health. We have young people that have never engaged in any sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. We have young people that have had sex, but have not experienced any negative consequences. And then we have young people that have had sex but have experienced negative consequences that include your STIs, your HIV, and your teenage pregnancies and the like. But then when we talk about HIV, we then have a case of young people that have been born HIV positive as a result of mother-to-child transmission or that acquired the virus at infancy. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about such young people that were born HIV positive, the struggle with that age group and looking at the first 90, which is that All people living with HIV should be tested and should know their status. The challenge is that we have young people that still do not know their status because of negative health-seeking behavior that are not necessarily forthcoming when it comes to testing. That's also not just, it's not just because of that, but also because of the laws and policies around the age of consent that we have in the country that become a bit of a barrier. And then secondly, you have young people that are engaging in unprotected or rather what we call risky sexual behavior. Mm-hmm. And then acquire or they have HIV transmitted to them. So this is the case that we then have with young people in Zimbabwe, in that a lot of infections are taking place, especially amongst young people, and that is why the Zimbabwe National HIV and AIDS Strategic Plan 3 extended then classifies young people as a key affected population because of the heightened level of risk that they are in.
Let's talk a little about the COVID-19 lockdown. Under the lockdown, we've had a lot of reports, a lot of discussions around medical healthcare programs being difficult for a lot of young Zimbabweans for them to access it. Amongst them being sexual reproductive healthcare, access to condoms, access to things like that. How would you argue the COVID-19 lockdown has affected young Zimbabweans living with HIV and AIDS?
Yeah, that's a very big one, Mike. It's been a tale of I can't even say two cities with COVID-19 and HIV in particular. So you'd realize as a country when COVID-19 came up, because this is something that has hit us for the first time, and we had no clue and no idea where to start in terms of how we respond to it. I think globally that has been the case. So it has been a case of topping and testing what would really work without necessarily having prior evidence as to its effectiveness. So as a country, we have adopted what the World Health Organization calls non-pharmaceutical interventions, besides the pharmaceutical interventions that are there. So these NPIs include the enforcement of lockdowns, the closure of borders, and the limitations of international travel, amongst others. So the one in particular that has affected young people a lot, especially with regards to accessing reproductive health care as well as HIV services, is the enforcement of lockdowns. Mm-hmm. So firstly, you had young people failing to, allowing people who are HIV positive, failing to access antiretroviral therapy because, first of all, they could not access the medical facilities where they could get the medication. First, because when if they left home and they get to a roadblock, the security forces would tell them, what's the reason you are traveling? Go back home. So at first, if they were told we are going to access antiretroviral therapy, they would still be sent back home. Everybody should go back home. And then with time, it became an issue of saying if you then want to access such a service, you need to produce your medical card or that book from the institution. Then you could then pass the roadblocks. But then the biggest challenge that we had with these lockdowns and roadblocks was the issue of forced disclosure, where a young person would be forced to disclose their HIV status to be able to justify why they are traveling. So because there was no prior training of these security officers with regards to handling health emergencies in such a pandemic, you then had young people being harassed on the basis of their status and having to shout as justifications of why they are going to the medical facilities, which was very unfriendly because that then perpetuates stigma and discrimination. If you have people from your community that had no idea you were HIV positive and you were not yet at that mental position to be able to disclose your status. So that was basically the case with HIV and even with access to other sexual and reproductive health services like condoms. Since young people were on lockdown, we are seeing evidence now of escalated cases of teenage pregnancies. And I'm going on a limb here to say we might even see heightened cases of HIV infections, of STI infections, because young people were not able to access these commodities that would help them prevent HIV and pregnancies.
If you minimize the gender-based violence that's happening within the homestead, this could potentially lead to a reduction in terms of the amount of people, I'll go out on a limb and say young people, that are contracting HIV and AIDS. What is your take on that?
Yeah, that's very true, in particular because when you look at the HIV burden, it's mostly on women, adolescent girls and young women, as well as women, as it were. So when you then look at the modalities around transmission and infection, the whole spectrum from infection to accessing treatment, care, and services, if you then introduce sexual and gender-based violence into that spectrum, it presents a whole bad case that could see us then losing some of the gains that we have made over the years. So you talk about sexual violence, for instance, as an example, where no care is really taken towards ensuring that there is negotiation for safe sex around if it's sexual violence. So if we're then failing to negotiate for safer sex, it means that if one partner is HIV positive and especially the perpetrator, that then results in transmission of HIV. Also looking at the fact that when it's sexual gender based violence, there is usually no use of any form of protection. So it's just haphazard like that, and it increases the chances of infection. You look at how where there is GBV, the issues are the power dynamics within the household put especially the women at a higher risk of HIV infection, because if as a man if I go out and do whatever I have to do and cannot really be questioned on my sexual behavior because I am very violent within the house, it means I can bring whatever disease, and I cannot give the woman a room to negotiate for safer sex despite my reckless behavior. So I increase the chances of infection then if I've acquired an infection outside of the household, if they were negative.
What needs to be done to lead to a reduction in terms of how many young people in Zimbabwe are contracting HIV and AIDS?
I think the first thing that has been done, if I'm sure you have heard the controversy around age of consent that has been taking place over the past few weeks, which unfortunately then took a somewhat wrong turn and was made an issue about contraception and was not looked at holistically. So that was an attempt to plug some of the policy gaps and legal gaps that are there to ensure that the policy side is plugged and we can focus on around provide provision of information and also provision of services. And then the second win that we have had maybe as a country, first we have the Zimbabwe School Health Policy that was passed. So we are still monitoring and supporting government towards its implementation to make sure that the health interventions for young people within school are solid and contribute towards the reduction. And then we have the new Education Act that was passed earlier on this year. So that also has some positives around ensuring that the government must hire sexual and reproductive health personnel within the school. So already that is a big positive. So we then just look forward to its implementation, because it's not just about the law, but what's more important is how it's also implemented on the ground.
Sesikhangela ke umkankaso we 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Siyezwa abanye besithi singayehlisa inani labantu abahlangana ngengxabangxoza ezindlini, silakho ukuyehlisa inani labantu abaphila ngegcubane le-HIV and AIDS. Ukubona njani lokho?
Kakhulu liqiniso sibili lelo, ngoba silabantu abatsha, ngizakhuluma kakhulu ngabantu abatsha abahleli ezindlini, ikakhulu ngakhangela ngegcikwane le-COVID-19, ukuthi abantu abatsha abaningi bese bevalelwe ezindlini. So nxa ekhona ohlukumezayo ngezocansi bese bevalelwe labantu abahlukumezayo, ukuthi nxa umuntu ehlukunyezwa kakhulu kwezocansi, akula protection isikhathi esiningi ebakhona, njalo akula negotiation ukuthi ucansi lwakhona noma luhlukumezekile lwenziwe ngendlela e-safe evikela ukuthi umuntu angatholi amagciwane amaningi athize ahlukeneyo. So khona lokhu kutsho ukuthi baningi kakhulu, especially abesifazane ababambe igciwane ngenxa yokuhlukunyezwa ezindlini.
Onkukamuri yeZimbabwe yehiye nje kuva kuna nhlanhlamoyo wechidiki wesangano Red Dot Youth ari kunyatsotsananguraka kuti nyika yeZimbabwe senyika, how well have we done munyaya yekurwisana nechirwere cheHIV and AIDS. Panguva iyo vanhu vechidiki vazhinji vari kugunun'una vachiti chirongwa chelockdown chinenge chiri kukanganisa upenyu hwavo, nepamusana pekuti patinotarisa nyaya dzehealthcare hanzi havasi kuwana kamikana yekuwana mishonga yavo zviri nyore, hanzi inenge iri kutinetsei. Ndiyo yaka zviri kutaurwa nanhlanhlamoyo. Nhlanhla arba adzokora zvakare vaabata nyaya yemhirizhonga iri kuitika mudzimba pasi pechirongwa chelockdown. Hanzi ndechimwewo chinhu ichi chiri kucontributa patinotarisa nyaya yekutekeshera kwechirwere cheHIV and AIDS. Tipewo maondero enyu muri weZimbabwe +12024650318. Munokwanisa kutitumira maondero enyu paWhatsApp. Zulukandaba lilako kusitela umbono wenu lisebenzisa iWhatsApp +12024650318. Uhlelo The Connection lilami uMike Hove sisanda ukuxoxa lo nhlanhlamoyo owenhlanganiso ye-Dot Youth. Now, as we continue the conversation on how COVID-19 has affected Zimbabwean youth, I want to delve deeper into some of the different people that have been affected. Amongst them is the disabled. Now, recently, the world was focusing on disabled during this time whereby we're focusing on human rights. During the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence campaign, which ends on the 10th, which is Human Rights Day. Now, Zim Rights allowed us to use one of our videos, which is going to lead to the next segment that we're going to be talking about, which is how COVID-19 has impacted the lives of the disabled. Let's head over to a video that we have courtesy of Zim Rights, of Nokutenda Muzuva, who explains her thoughts on how COVID-19 has affected the lives of the disabled. Let's hear more from Nokutenda.
Because some of us don't know how to speak in sign language, so they don't read our lips when we are talking. So they're supposed to be provided in those masks, the shield masks. That's what they're supposed to be provided to persons who are around them, the persons who communicate with them. And them and so, but those were not available for the class, and they are very expensive, like the gloves for a person who is pushing a wheelchair. Maybe let's say you stay with someone relative, you need the gloves to push a wheelchair so that you cannot contract COVID-19. So for persons with disabilities, and there's a young people, I say this to our country, to our society, that we should really prioritize persons with disabilities, because we are at risk of attracting COVID-19 or of getting infected with COVID-19, because I really depend on you to help me for something that I need. So let's unite and give solutions. Provide us with what has been promised, like the shield, like the clothes, because persons with disabilities, most of them, they have poor background. So they can't afford those masks which are being bought. So please, help us to.
Well, Muriel Zimbabwe, you just heard there from Nokutenda Muzuba, who was speaking on how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the lives of the disabled. She talks about PPE, access to PPE. She highlights that the fact that some people live with certain disabilities that make it difficult, for example, to wear masks like the regular person. We talk of conditions like cerebral palsy and so forth. We're going to hear more from Samantha Sabanda of Signs of Hope Trust, who's going to be giving us her thoughts. But you are hearing there from Nokutenda Muzuba. Arikuti aiwa muri Zimbabwe arikukumbira kuti tishande pamwe chete mukugadzirisa nyaya yematambudziko akatarisana nevanhu varikurarama neurema pasi pechirongwa chelockdown. Let's hear more from Samantha Sabanda of our Signs of Hope Trust. We managed to reach out to Samantha via the phone. Let's hear more from Samantha.
In Zimbabwe, as the economy started opening up, they still zoned on closing the informal sector. So a lot of people with disabilities were affected. No income, no social security, no cushioning for people with disabilities. We realized that even though the government had promised to cushion vulnerable groups, people with disabilities among them, they failed to do so. We heard that a few households were given some money, but all that money didn't even go far. In terms of education as well, it was a big one because the schools were closed and people were going online. So people with disabilities who are in school were affected. I remember our organization had to source some donations through a challenge that we had so that people with disabilities wouldn't drop out of school.
Samantha, tell me something. I was reading a statement recently released by the United Nations, and they were saying that the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown procedures that have been set down by different governments across the whole world have affected people with disabilities. If we zone in on Zimbabwe, they say that people with disabilities lost their livelihoods, one. Secondly, they lost their access to healthcare facilities, which is something that happened across the board. But whilst we're focusing on people with disabilities here, they also say that they are, have challenges accessing nutrition, food, and most importantly, information to the COVID-19 pandemic, and they are very prone to gender-based violence. As an advocate that fights for the rights of the disabled, I would love to hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts on this statement?
I would also want to support strongly the point on information. We know in Zimbabwe that there were organizations who even took the government to court. I think there were about 5 organizations because the information that was being given was not in accessible formats. So people who are deaf didn't get access to the information. People with visual impairments didn't get access. So it had been very difficult. The fact that we all had to wear masks and do things like these, some people with disabilities like psychological disabilities like autism, they couldn't wear masks, and it wasn't actually zeroed in on how they are supposed to protect themselves. It wasn't zeroed in on how people with support persons were supposed to protect themselves. So I know for a fact that people with disabilities were affected in that area. And also, according to our talk with the Minister of Health, they hadn't produced any material in accessible formats. They were still waiting for other universities. You know, like up to now, there wasn't that information. So it was very sad. And in terms of the cases on gender-based violence, you know, we have established that it's pretty difficult for people with disabilities to even report their cases. One is the issue of access to justice, in which we see a lot of people who are perpetrators of violence against people with disabilities are walking scot-free. They haven't had their day in court. So access to justice for people with disabilities is very difficult. and the way that we're expected to report our cases, that's going to the police, calling a hotline. Some people with disabilities are prone to violence from their support persons. So to then say, take me to the police station, you know, I've seen in countries like the UK where there are panic buttons and so forth. In Zimbabwe, we don't have that. So people end up not reporting their cases because maybe their perpetrator is their support person.
Now, let's take a look at the discussion around PPE. That's one of the biggest discussions in Zimbabwe right now. For every sector, education, business, health, practically every sector in life right now is having a big discussion around access to PPE. Would you argue people with disabilities are receiving equal access to PPE in Zimbabwe?
I'll say no to that because, like I mentioned, there are different kinds of disabilities. And the mask is not really the best for everyone, you know. And so if you check at, if you look at the prices of a face shield, for example, which other people would prefer for their children, for example, who have got cerebral palsy, the face shields are expensive, you know. So I've seen face shields ranging from $2 to $3. So it's very expensive. And for people who are saying, our study by the UNICEF showed that families with a member with a disability are always prone to poverty. So we can't even begin to say the PPE is accessible. Yes, there are many places that are selling the PPE. Yes, there are even organizations that are giving some PPE as donations, but it's not enough. So I would say access should be improved.
Now, there's another thing I'd like to talk about here, Samantha, which is COVID-19 response plans put in place to help people in society. We see government had a COVID-19 response plan in action to help youth. They had one in action to help the business communities, health sector, and so forth. I want to zone into, of course, people with disabilities fall under these different categories. But here we're talking about a group that deserves special attention because of the needs that they need. So I would like to delve deeper into the COVID-19 response plan to help the disabled. What advice would you have for the Zimbabwean government in such a circumstance to help people with disabilities, especially during this time whereby we're fighting a global pandemic and we're still under the COVID-19 lockdown?
So I would say that the government should be considerate that there are people who are not employed, people who have got no registered companies, because I realized that during this response, people who had everything together, you know, were the ones that could say benefited more compared to people who had no registered organizations and who had a few dollars to their name, you know. So we have established through research that people with disabilities are amongst the poor, that poverty and disability goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't pro-poor. The strategy wasn't pro-poor. So the things like lockdown as well, you know, you need to have money for you to be able to stay at home, mm-hmm. you know. So our strategies were not pro-poor. What I would then recommend is an inclusive strategy. What I mean by inclusive is that all the strategies and all the responses that are being given should be accessible. If it's communication, if it's whatever, it should be accessible to everyone, people with disabilities included. I remember the government did set up a response team to COVID-19. No person with a disability involved there. So you'll see that in every response, people with disability become an afterthought because no one in that response team is involved and really steering up the conversation on how it should be disability inclusive. I'd say that is what I would recommend.
Thomas Banda, bese sithinta ke udaba lolungolimi luka mama ngesindebele. Awusitshela umbono wakho mayelana ngalolu daba ukuthi umkhuhlane lo we COVID-19 njalo uhlelo lwe lockdown olujonge ukuvikela ukumemetheka komkhuhlane we COVID-19 luthinte njani impilo zabantu abakhubazekileyo abantu abadisabled
Ngiyibonayo Mike ukuthi iCovid-19 hayi ibi very very difficult i situation yakho na ibinzima kakhulu kubantu abakhubazekileyo first of all sibona ukuthi abantu abalama disabilities abalamfundo lokhu ku-establishwe through research ukuthi wonkhona abantu abanama disabilities abafundanga ngakho ke abakwanisi ukuthi bebe le formal employment abakwanisi ukuya emsebenzini like a formal so i-COVID-19 yathi qalisa kwase kwaba le lockdown and then ama informal businesses wonke ase avalwa so nxa sebevula again baphinda basebesithi abalama informal businesses abakavuli so ba-affecteka kakhulu ngenxa ukuthi i-income kumbe imali inzuzo abayitholayo yayingekho yayingenelanga so lokhu kwasuka kwabanzima kakhulu sibuye kwezemfundo again izikolo zavalwa during i-lockdown sabona izikolo eziningi ziqalisenza ama-online lessons kumbe befunda nge-internet but for ama-families ale-disability siyakwazi ukuthi idatha iyadura kakhulu eZimbabwe so nge-research eyenziweyo kwabonakala ukuthi ama-families amaningi alomuntu ole-disability abaphili kuhle baphuwa so into ekhona yokuthi kwasuka kwaba nzima abanye bayehluleka ngisho nokuya esikolo ukubuyela esikolo ngenxa yokuthi lama-fees asuka kakhwezwa so kwaba nzima kakhulu empilweni zabantu abalama-disability
Yeah, we hear you here, Samantha. Unfortunately, time is running out for our conversation here. But however, and Anche Kumrochi, mupinde mchituza o maundre ni pamsero pezo nya I ne rimiro amai ne shona chijipete duguru kure.
Nchengati vanvani matisabilities vanyato wana like kuwoma kwa upenyu panguva ino ye COVID. Vazhinji vacho havana mabusiness akaregistra. Takaona kuti first thing zvichitaura nyaya yelockdown, vanhu vakanzi especially vane mabusiness vasina mabusiness ngatovhara. Kana ari mavendors akatodzingwa mutown zvese. Saka ndakaona vanhu vane disabilities kana kuti vane hurema vakawanda vachishaya chikafu, vachishaya mari, vachishaya kana any zviwanikwa zvekuti vawane. Tikaona futi kuti patakanzi vanhu vari kuzopiwa mari nehurumende mari iyi yakanonoka number one two yange iri shoma three pakazotaurwa kunzi hatisi kumboona vanhu vacho kuti vari papi pacho exactly kuti tivape mari idzi pampasina kana database kana data yange iripo yakatotanga kungokolekta which means kuti munhu anga asina that information kuti takunyoresa mazita akatojambwa nechirongwa saka ndakaona vanhu vane hurema vachiremerwa neupenyu zvisingaite plus kuchikoro zvikoro zvizhinji zvakavharwa kana kuti maschools ese akangovharwa 6 months vanhu vari palockdown saka ndakaona maschools mamwe aakuenda like online kudzidza over the internet tikatarisa tsvakurudzo dzakaitwa dzinoratidza kuti vanhu vane madisabilities vakawanda nemhuri dzavo vanotambura saka otarisa mari inodiwa kuti munhu atenge data kuti apinde iwayo maonline zvaidhura saka vanhu vakawanda vakarasikirwa nedzidzo vakarasikirwa zvisingaiti in terms of education panyaya yePPE apa pane nyaya because unoona kuti it's not a one size fit all situation especially kana takatarisa vanhu vane madisabilities unoona kuti pane vamwe vane cerebral palsy cerebral palsy inoita kuti munhu arambe dzimwe nguva achibuda like masiriri so mukana saka mwana iyeye ukatomupa maski ka haitomboiite maski saka even vanhu vari deaf dzimwe nguva vanotocommunicata nekutarisa muromo yevamwe kuti iri kufamba sei munhu uyu communication yavo inoda kuti munhu asina maski kana kuti ane chinhu chiti transparent chekuvhara oona vamwe vasina maoko ozoona kuti situation yacho yange isiri kuita saka pakuzotsvaga maalternatives apa I remember nichitarisa maprize emaface shield face shield yaitobvira kana ku $2 kana $3 Saka zvaidhura. Access also means it should be, you should be able to get it and at a cheap price as well. But my price, they weren't friendly. Considering kuti tiri kuti my families are nemunhu ane disability, are poor. Saka takaona kuti the things weren't accessible. Plus my innovations haana kuuya nemutsindo sezvaaifanira kuita. Vanhu vaya vanotigadzirira hembe vaitofanira kuona kuti alright, since pane such a diverse population, tinozviita sei kuti vanhu vese vagone kuwana. So for now ndingataiwa hazvisi accessible kune vanhu vese.
Shout out to Samantha Svanda of Signs of Hope and Trust. Ungenile ngempela kuhlelo uSamantha esitshela kunenge ukuthi abantu abakhubazekileyo vanhu vari kurarama neurema vari kusangana nematambudziko akadii. But as mentioned earlier on, Muriya Zimbabwe, this campaign, 16 Days Against Gender-Based Violence, it all runs up until the 10th Muswe China, 10 December 2020. Commemorated every year. So this year, Muswa 10 in Dipo Parukutari Swakazware Human Rights Day. Now, as we lead towards Human Rights Day, I decided to bring on some experts to talk about the importance of the day and, of course, a zone down to human rights and youth in Zimbabwe. So I brought onto the program Rwazano Makumbe, who's a human rights lawyer, an expert herself, who tells us more about the COVID-19 pandemic, how the COVID-19 pandemic has led to a violation of our youth rights in Zimbabwe, and so much more. Let's head over to my conversation with Rwazano.
Thanks. The theme is quite relevant as we are going through the pandemic. So obviously it is premised on how we can recover or how we can shape our societies post-COVID-19. So the idea is to champion having a human rights-based approach in everything that we do, in all initiatives and efforts that governments, that individuals, that societies and communities are going to put in place. I think it's also quite important because it sort of brings everyone together. So it's not just limited to saying the government is going to do this, right, but it's trying to zoom into every individual and say in your little corner, wherever you are in the world, you can play a part, you can do something, stand up for human rights. I'm actually quite excited and happy about this thing because it's not exclusionary in a way. It shows that we all have an important role to play and we all contribute to our societies becoming resilient and our societies developing into what we want to see, but also achieving the sustainable development goals in the process.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we focus, what's on the focus of the theme itself? I read a little more on the UN page. It talks about creating equal opportunities and, of course, addressing the failures exposed by COVID-19. And this is, we're not just talking Zimbabwe, but across the board.
Mm-hmm.
My first question, as before we delve deeper in that, is how do you think that statement relates to Zimbabwe as a nation?
Well, to be honest, when we look at the situation in Zimbabwe, we cannot even question if it is relevant to Zimbabwe because it is very relevant, and as much as it is relevant to the broader society, that is the global community, it also comes down to the situation in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe needs to recover better. Zimbabwe needs to stand up for human rights. As a country, we need to stand up for human rights because our human rights record has been very questionable for a very long time now. But also now, as people in Zimbabwe, as citizens and residents in Zimbabwe, we are also very much included. We see how civil society in Zimbabwe is strong and people are fighting to have the government protect human rights, promote human rights one way or the other. So I think it boils down to that. I like how this theme of recover better, stand up for human rights sort of matches what Zimrights has been doing. They have a campaign under their Be Champion tag and Be the Champion tag, and I think that is very relevant. And to be honest, it might be coincidental, but it sort of feeds into each other because they are saying be the champion for human rights in your society, in your community. If you're from Harare, do something that contributes to human rights. If you're from Gokwe, do something that contributes to human rights in Zimbabwe. So for us as Zimbabweans, I think we should take this to heart. We should have a self-introspection and think about what you as an individual can do for your community, for your society. You don't have to be thinking about the country as a whole, because that might be overwhelming, to be honest. But you as an individual, what exactly can you do? And now when we look at the situation in Zimbabwe over the last decade or so, we see that human rights have, yes, been talked about, but they have not been respected. There has not been that applicability of human rights standards within our institutions, within the manner in which our country is governed. So it is time. It is time that we take this to heart. We take this seriously. We have been having Human Rights Day every year. So what's stopping us? Let's take this opportunity to reaffirm our position as a country, to reaffirm our position as societies and as individuals on where we stand on human rights, and also show that it's actually possible to change. Because I think one of the challenges that we are having is people questioning whether it's going to ever be possible to have a Zimbabwe that respects human rights, or a Zimbabwe that promotes human rights. But I believe that it's possible. It's possible to have change in our society. It boils down to issues of political will. It boils down to issues of our leaders realizing the importance that human rights play, not only in contributing to the development of our country, but also in ensuring that our people have a better living standard, and also our people have a better future.
Mm-hmm. Now, whilst delving deeper on the theme itself, addressing the failures brought to light by COVID-19, Zimbabwe over the since March, when the lockdown was implemented up until today, a lot of issues have been brought to light: the healthcare sector, the business sector, people you know with disabilities. So many people have actually come to the forefront and saying this is our biggest issue. Zimbabwean government, as trying an attempt to be proactive, have recently President Mnangagwa was talking about revamping the healthcare sector, and so forth. Do you think the measures put in place by government are enough to address this aspect when we talk about the theme, fixing the issues brought to light by COVID-19?
I think when we ask that question, whether it's enough, it's quite difficult to say, well, it's not enough or it is enough. But when we look at the situation in Zimbabwe, more needs to be done. There has to be a move in terms of where we are as a country, not just on paper, but in reality. Zimbabwe is in a position where it's not supporting its citizens. It's not supporting its people to be their best. It's literally pushing people to settle and be okay with a situation that is not okay. So I believe that the government can do more, and then the government is in a position to actually do more for its people. So doing more from a government perspective is obviously looking from policy issues, from practice issues, from changing, for example, the manner in which human rights are treated or the manner in which human rights are recognized in Zimbabwe. We know that, for example, people in the country are not given that free space to criticize the government. I think that's the cornerstone of our society moving forward. The government has to create a space that allows people to speak up and also allows people to contribute. So if people are not allowed to speak out, it means that the government wants to do whatever they want, and I don't think that is fair. The cornerstone of every society or every democratic society is free speech and free expression, because that not only builds the society, but also it allows for growth in the society. So at this point, I think our government needs to recognize that instead of thwarting, instead of demonizing those who criticize the government or those who come up with different ideas from the government, they're allowed to do so, and they're given the chance to do so. I, for one, do not believe that the utilization of the law as an instrument to oppress, for example, is justified. I don't think it's justified, and I think it's something that we need to move from as a country, something that we need to stand up against as a people. Note that it is people who are doing this. It is individuals who are making decisions to do this, and these decisions can be changed. This is the time for people to reaffirm that we will not do this. We have seen that there are so many segments in our society, so many people in our society who are complicit to this. We know this, and obviously every time we question, like, why is someone doing this? But we need to look deeper into ourselves as individuals and also as institutions and see how sustainable this way of moving is, and I don't think it is quite sustainable long term. It means that it's only going to be taking the country backwards and not forwards. So in terms of efforts that the government can do, more can certainly be done. Let's start by the basics. Let's start by allowing free expression, free speech. Let's start by ensuring that the public is involved in terms of, for example, constitutional amendments. Let's start by doing that. Let's start by ensuring that people have a voice and people are included. People are allowed to contribute to the development of Zimbabwe, because people certainly have so much to contribute, but then the space for them to do so is not being provided. And where people fight for that space, they end up being in prison, they end up being identified as culprits, which is not a good way for a society to move forward.
More about the youth demographic in Zimbabwe. How would you argue that the COVID-19 pandemic has led to a violation of the rights of young people in Zimbabwe?
Not to say it has led to a violation, because violations have been going on for a long time. I think it has enhanced the violation of young people's rights. So we know that for so many years, there hasn't been a functional system in Zimbabwe. So, for example, we look at the health sector, we look at the education sector. What COVID-19 has done was to put everything into perspective. So there has been exploitation of that situation that was already there, which has obviously worsened the state that we were in. For example, when we look at the education system, children were out of school for a very long time, but because also our country does not have infrastructure, it was not able to ensure that many children or many young people are able to continue with their studies. We have seen what is going on in universities with NOST in the past few weeks, the challenges that young people are facing, young people who are trying to develop themselves, but because the system just is not functioning or the system just is not presenting that opportunity for them, they feel left down. Education is very important, and in Zimbabwe, for all of us who grew up in Zimbabwe, we know that education was like the number one key thing on the agenda in our families. But now, when we look at it, it seems like we are being told the opposite thing, because people are questioning, if I go to school, there's no employment afterwards. And even now, young people who are in education systems, they're saying we're not getting much from it. So that is some of the exploitation that has come up as a result of COVID. That you exposing of lack of infrastructure, exposing of poor governance in our institutions has obviously shown that young people's rights have been violated or have been violated for a very long time. But 2020 has really been, you know, a year that has shown us that so much has gone wrong in our country, and that so much needs to be done to ensure that we recover better, and also that we include everyone in our society to contribute to the growth and development of the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we wrap up our conversation and still focusing here on youth, I want to go back to the theme itself, recover, stand up for human rights, and like you mentioned, Zim rights, be the champion. And so when we talk about young people from a holistic approach, what can individual young people in Zimbabwe do to ensure that these circumstances are not continued and human rights are respected?
Thank you, Mike. I think that's a very important question. And also, it's, I think, a question that every generation of young people have asked themselves. So when we look at history and how the fight or struggle for human rights has gone on. We see that young people have been central to this. We see the situation in South Africa. We see the situation in apartheid South Africa. We also saw the same situation during the Arab Spring. And I think those are good examples, because they show, and recently, obviously, the situation in Nigeria. And I think these examples show that young people are resilient. It shows that young people have a voice, and their voices must be heard. In as much as the space for them to get their voices heard may not be created, young people do have a voice. And because of how creative and innovative young people are, there's always a way to ensure that they contribute to societal development. So now for young people in Zimbabwe, I think our problems are quite huge. And sometimes, like I said, it's really overwhelming as an individual. And also because of the environment within which we are, where if you try to speak up, you either end up in prison. There's serious intimidation and threatening of anyone who comes out to say, to criticize what is going on. So I think for a young person in Zimbabwe, look within your space, look within your community, your corner. What exactly can you do? How can you contribute to changing the lives of the people around you, to changing the lives of the people who live next door to you? What can you do to start building, you know, that mental strength with your fellow young peers on what is important in Zimbabwe and what we should focus on? Instead of, you know, looking at the situation as you as an individual have to solve it, be able to influence others around you to also join you in, you know, in this quest to see change in Zimbabwe. My other issue that I've noticed is that young people, because of the situation that they're being put in, some young people are now becoming complicit in human rights violations. And I think we are the generation that has to put an end, that has to put a stop to this. So being complicit because you want to get the benefits of it, I think that is a long, that is a very short term and myopic solution. We need to see beyond ourselves. We need to see how history is going to judge us. How are we going to be looked at? Are they going to say that is the generation that fought to see change? Or are they going to say that is the generation that saw the situation and found a way to make themselves comfortable? I don't think it's time for us to feel comfortable, but it's time for us to constantly challenge ourselves and see whether our efforts will not result in something. I believe that every tiny bit of efforts that we all put in as individuals goes a long way. And I think this is the time for us to stand firm and reaffirm that position and use all the education that we have received, use all the challenges that we have faced. Let's get that strength and move as young people and come together as young people and think about how best we can contribute to our society.
All right, Rosanna, thank you so much for your time. Do you have any last words that you'd like to throw before we wrap up?
Well, I would probably just add that today also shows the end, or rather I would say the beginning of the campaign to end gender-based violence. And I think that is very important because it coincides, the 10th of December coincides obviously with Human Rights Day. But at the same time, let's ask to remember that this is a 365 day thing. It's every day that we should remember the vulnerable in our society. It's every day that we should take responsibility for our actions. It's every day that we should be our sisters and brothers keeper. So let's take every opportunity to make our societies better. Every little small effort goes a long way. Thank you.
All right, Maria Zimbabwe, you just heard that from Ruazano Makumbe, a human rights defender, a human rights lawyer. Zimbabwe, umuntu ongisakhulayo ofundile ngempela 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 ubethinta phela udaba losuku lwe-Human Rights Day olunanzwa minyaka yonke mhla ka-10 December. Kwane loko namhla mthwakazi muhle Zimbabwe muhle. We have now reached the end of our program. Nathi Mchongwa, tonight on The Connection, we're talking about COVID-19. We spoke to health experts. Nhlanhla Moyo was on the program. We spoke to human rights advocates. Ruazana Makumbe was the most recent interview. You heard also heard from Samantha Sbanda of Science of Hope Trust as they were talking about how COVID-19 is affecting Zimbabwean youth. Now, latest COVID figures as we wrap up our program one more time. Zimbabwe, according to the most recent information released by the Ministry of Health, once again, this is a pre-recorded program, so chances are there's a possibility that the figures could change. But the most recent information that we have, Maria Zimbabwe, goes as follows. Over 10,800 COVID cases have been confirmed in Zimbabwe. Once again, these are cumulative cases, which means these are all cases accounted from the very first time that Zimbabwe detected its first COVID cases. So over 10,800 cumulative cases in Zimbabwe, 8,970 cumulative recoveries detected, and 294 deaths to date. Now, as of last night, 1,270 PCR tests were conducted. 121 new cases were detected, 93 recoveries, and 3 deaths. Zimbabwe currently has 1,573 active cases. Bulawayo and Harare are still amongst the most infected in the country. Bulawayo is sitting on 2,605 cumulative cases and Harare on 3,483 cumulative cases. When we talk about the death toll, Bulawayo currently has registered 83 deaths and Harare 131. Kwanele kwa namusha mthakazo muhle Zimbabwe muhle tashika kumagumo echirongwa chedu chinobhuruka chinomara. Let's meet same time, same place. Pano pachirongwa chedu chinechidiki muineni Mike Hove. If you're looking to chat with me, you can still catch me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at BigMike3, BigMyke3. Aiwa mure Zimbabwe hotinchaye pansi, anokoneka ine mfaro. Ndino wenyu Mike Hove, tosangana pano pachirongwa chedu chinechidiki, same time, same place. Pano, pane venue studio 7. Bye-bye.